Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands. I wanted to give a little introduction to my guest for this episode, Amy Long. She's a fourth degree black belt in American Kenpo. She's the author of the Kenpo Continuum book, and she is the owner of the Sacramento Kenpo Karate YouTube channel. I will put links to all of these things in the show notes. Thank you, and enjoy. Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, the podcast about Kenpo and the martial arts and whatever else we happen to discuss today. So I have Amy Long with me today, and we're going to chit-chat and just talk about her journey, and I'll sprinkle in some of my journey too, so that we have kind of everybody's story and just whatever we happen to talk about, and that's where we'll go. So to kind of just jump in to give, you know, my brief history, I started the Kenpo in a Chinese Kenpo school, which was essentially the Tracy's karate curriculum in the early to mid 90s. After seeing Jeff Speakman's The Perfect Weapon, said, "Hey, I got to do that Kenpo thing." So I got involved in that. Did that for a few years. Almost got to my third brown when I left for the Army. While I was in the Army, I did a little bit of Taekwondo and Hapkido and some boxing. I got out of the military and didn't find a Kenpo school to get back into. So I got involved in my next core art, which is a capoeira, and I've been doing that for coming up on 17 years now. But, you know, I still kept my love for Kenpo and decided to find a school here. I'm out in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And so I found the current school that I'm with. So my instructor is Bill Piper, and yeah, just been enjoying the journey. I am now a green belt once again, and you know, working my way through to that uncharted territory for me. You know, working on the brown belt stuff. So I'm excited for what's coming next. Also, as of this recording, you know, recently taught my first. Eyes are getting on me, which it isn't technically the first class I've ever taught. So a big part of my capoeira journey was I inherited the group that I was training in. And so I ended up teaching a lot of the classes for many of the years. But yeah, this is kind of my first official Kenpo teacher life. So I'm excited about that. And now that I have the podcast, it's good to be able to talk to everyone that's in the different, you know, different stages of their training. So, you know, I'm not just talking to all the 10th degrees and the high ups. I, you know, want to kind of get everybody in between. So, you know, that's my story and sticking to it. So, yeah, let's jump into, you know, how and when did Kenpo find you, and you know, how did your journey kind of start?
Well, hi, Reggie. Thank you for having me on your podcast. I started when I don't want to tell you what year it was, back when I was just short of 12. A friend of mine was taking it, and basically I just wanted to be better friends with her. Plus, my sister was a huge bully, and I wanted to be able to protect myself from her. So I started taking Kenpo down in the San Francisco Bay Area. Took that for several years. Then my family moved to Sacramento. And I did a Parker school, and then I went up here and did a Tracy school, and then I went back to a Parker school, and then a Tracy school, and then I did mostly Parker after that. But I was in Ray Arquilla school. That's a Tracy school. And I've had, I'm trying to think what all instructors. I was under Daryl Liner for a number of years. That's when I was teaching. Dave Crouch, he was probably one of my favorite instructors. He's one of my favorite people, as a matter of fact. Brightest guy, one of the brightest guys I've ever met. He was pretty amazing. I just always loved Kenpo. It was the idea of thinking and moving at the same time is kind of what kept me going. Those are the two things I like to do most. So thinking about how bodies move and the different ways they move and how to generate power and just the finesse. I was I've always been more of a technician rather than a mechanic when it comes to Kenpo. Mm-hmm. While I was at Daryl's school, I did start to teach. My friend Julie Cicero was invited to teach a class, and she asked me to help her. So we did it together for a little while. And then family concerns happened, and she wasn't able to continue teaching. I took over the class and taught for a number of years. It was during that time that I started posting forms and later techniques on YouTube. The reason I did it, well, initially the reason I started posting some forms was because my instructor didn't really give me much feedback when it came to my forms. And mm-hmm. so I said, well, I'm going to post it for the public. I know I'll get feedback. So because people always got something to say. I actually frequently found it pretty helpful because I posted it with the idea of, if this helps you, great. If you see anything that you would like to comment on, if you see something I need to work on, feel free to let me know. And people did. And I a lot of times found it really helpful. Like one point, I was practicing form 6, I think. I don't know, maybe form 4. I don't remember. But anyway, I was doing the forms and record it and re-record it and re-record it. Found one I liked, posted it, deleted the rest. Turns out I posted one where I forgot to do unfurling crane on the left side. I was like, huh, I didn't even notice because, you know, I'd done it so many times. And then when it was pointed out to me, I'm like, well, there's a learning thing. Good thing you're paying attention, yada, yada. And then it just became funny because it doesn't have to be perfect. That's one of the things I figured out. So posted a bunch. I was on KenpoNet. There's mention of, I believe it's Bob Hubbard who created KenpoNet. I used to post on there all the time. And that was where I got the idea of doing the Kenpo Continuum. People were talking about the journey. And I thought, yeah, it's great that there's a book for, 12 top people or whatever. But what about all the other people who have spent, decades of their lives working on Kenpo? They've had their black belt. They've taught schools. They've helped kids. They've all the things that people who devote their life to Kenpo do. And I thought, well, what about their stories? They count. They matter. And so I kind of floated the idea on KenpoNet, and someone said, kind of like a Kenpo yearbook. And I'm like, kind of, I guess. Like a who's who in a smaller scale. So I said, I'm a book publisher. What the heck? I'll do it. So I put out word that anyone who's been in Kenpo has been a black belt for at least 10 years. You have to have not just been in for 10 years, but been a black belt for 10 years. And I managed to find a bunch of people who wanted to share their story. And it was kind of cool because, for me, it was just a project of love of, here's something I can give back to the Kenpo community. And some of the people, I mean, who doesn't want to read about themselves in a book? I mean, let's be honest. It's cool. It's a nice little ego bump. Mm-hmm. But also there was like one person, he was so thrilled because he had been diagnosed as terminal. And, he said, thank you so much for doing this. This is for my family because it's something that they can have to remember me by, to my story and something that was important to me. So that was kind of cool that I could help him in that way. I managed to meet a bunch of the people. I've gone to lots of Kenpo camps and tournaments and stuff over the years. And I would bring my book with me after it came out, and other people did too. And we all signed each other's books, like our autograph book. It was kind of fun. Met a whole lot of the people there. What else to say? I started my own school in, I don't know, it was 2007, I think. I'm not sure. For a little while, I went with Speakman's group and decided pretty quickly that wasn't really for me. Then I was I didn't quite have a home for a little while. And that's when I connected with Dave Crouch. And his approach to Kenpo was so different than anybody else that I had seen. He talks more. I see he's on your list. He's a good guy. He talked about the different shapes and just a different way of generating power using the shape of the motion, the shape of the move. And so I spent a fair amount of time training with him and haven't seen him for a number of years. He got a girlfriend who he later married. And as soon as he got a girlfriend, I didn't get any more lessons. Yeah, that was disappointing.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
Yeah.
I know how that goes.
Well, I look forward to hearing
been there
podcast.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to having him on. Like you mentioned, and I'm sure I've posted. Yeah, he has agreed to be on. Just a matter of getting people on the schedule. But yeah, he's on the list to be on. So
he's an absolute wealth of knowledge. Interesting knowledge too. Just a whole interesting way of looking at it. So
yeah, that's something that's been really fun about doing this is just, you know, one, getting all the stories like you mentioned, you know, with your book. You know, getting the usual suspects, but getting all the rest of us out there, getting their stories. It's important to get all of the different sides and the different perspectives and the different journeys.
And yeah, the whys of it. Why people, that was the premise for the book was, why did you get in it and what has kept you going? Because it's a lot of work, a lot of intention. After I posted the first one, I got a whole slew of people saying, well, I wanted to be in it. Why wasn't I, you know, why didn't I get a chance to be in it? And are you going to do another one? Well, a couple years later, I ended up doing a second one, but getting people for the second book was 10 times harder, which surprised me because all these people saying, I want to be in the book. And I'm like, oh. But I had, gosh, I had like 125 people in the second book, which was a lot more than the first. And that was pretty amazing because I opened it up to Tracy Kempo people too. And they were very pleased about that. And of course, after I published the second book, people were saying, well, I didn't get a chance. Are you going to do a third one? It's like, you know, if someone wants to, you know, create a space where people can let me know and I can get, you know, if I got 100 people to do it, sure, I would. It just, God, my Facebook friends list exploded because I kept adding people going, hi, do you want to do this? Hi, do you want to do this? Met a lot of people that way.
I'm heading down that road. So when I started the podcast, you know, I just, of course I reached out to, you know, the people that I know directly. You know, I had to get my first Kempo instructor on, and he was actually, I think, like episode 2. So I was really excited to get him on, but then, you know, I kind of figured that it was going to be, oh, well, you know, I'm going to get a lot of quote unquote, non-known people, but a lot of the big name and the who's were some of the first people that were like, yeah, I'll you know, be on. And I was just kind of overwhelmed by that. And, you know, so I've just been kind of booking people, but as of recently I've started doing the same, similar thing and just, you know, all right, I'm just going to add people on social media there. And to my surprise, a lot of people are, you know, adding me back and, you know, I shoot them a message about asking them to be on the podcast. And so far everybody's been, I haven't got any flat out no's so far. So fingers crossed, haven't exactly gotten yeses from everyone, but no flat out no.
People like to think about it.
That's a good start. Yeah.
I debated with my book if I should include any of the people who were in the journey. I have to say, Tom Bleeker was not at all happy that I did the continuum. He harassed me by email for a little while. So he was not happy. Cool. Yeah. But I thought, you know, they're already in it. They already have a forum. So instead, what I did is I offered the opportunity to put any quote on the back of the book. And I did get, did get some quotes. Lee Wedlake is a friend of mine. He's a good guy. He had put a quote on the back of my first one, and I put him in the dedication in the second book. It's nice to, you know, mention people.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah. I did record an episode with Mr. Wedlake.
Yeah.
It's not out as of this recording.
Yeah, but, I hadn't seen it.
But yeah, we did. It is coming soon. And you know, that was a good conversation. And I was like, yeah, we're definitely going to have to do, you know, multiple parts, and we have to have him on again. As we're recording, I only have one repeat guest so far, and that's Sean Kelly. I'm definitely looking to have some of the folks that I've recorded with multiple episodes, because there's just so many things that you know, well, really everybody kind of has to say, that it's hard to contain it in just one, you know, one little hour or so. So
that's true.
That's definitely on the plan, because something it's definitely Kenpo folk are not shy about chatting, about talking about, you know, their lives and things.
So that's true.
It's good for me. Lots of content to mine. So
that is
I'm
true.
Happy about that.
One of the other things I enjoyed doing with Kenpo is when I went to Kenpo camps or big tournaments or something, I brought my camera. And even back in the day before there was digital everywhere, you know, before everyone's phones did everything, I'd go to a camp and I'd take probably 500, 1,000 pictures and just of everybody doing their thing. And then I went to Sean's camp once and I made a DVD that I just gave to all the instructors so they could share the pictures with their students. And I was pleased to note that after sending out all the pictures everywhere, I started seeing them show up on people's social media, which I thought was kind of cool. I have a thing about documenting, and I obviously you do too, or you wouldn't be doing a podcast, but doing, writing the books and posting stuff on YouTube and taking pictures is just a way of saying, hey, here's Kenpo as it was, here's people in Kenpo. Because, you know, people look back now and they look for pictures of Mr. Parker and videos of him doing stuff, and those are quite cherished. So I thought, you never know who's going to be the next big thing. And even if they're not, their family will, they and their family will cherish, hey, this was me back in 20 years ago when I first started Kenpo or whatever. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, no, I was speaking with someone recently and it sparked a thought that I really hadn't thought about, but now that we're losing some of the, original people and stuff like that, that there's, we're getting closer and closer to a time where, there's not going to be people around that have, trained directly with Ed Parker or know about Ed Parker. We're going to, coming up on to where, there's going to be that disconnect. And, if we don't have, the books and podcasts and photos and all of these kind of things to jog the memory and kind of keep that information out there, we're going to lose it. And so, yeah, I think it's really important and it's really good to have, people like you that were like, hey, we should document, some of these things. And it's kind of a fine line about what's like, be in the moment and, just be staring down our cameras and our phones and all that stuff like that. But on the other side, it's like, yeah, we need some of us to get this stuff down, because things get lost in translation as we're playing the telephone game and who said this or who said that, and that gets lost over the years, and so yeah, having it directly from the people that were there or doing whatever.
How many Kenpoists does it take to change a light bulb? It only takes one to change it, but everybody else will say, well, that's not what Mr. Parker told me.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's one of the reasons why, I have this podcast is so that we can get the stories directly from the people that were there, and we don't get, I'm sure there's still, I'm sure there's still going to be, the various opinions or ideas of how things are or supposed to be or whatever. But as long as we're getting the stories from the direct people, then.
Well, I have heard, and I obviously don't know for sure of this, but that Mr. Parker would show certain things differently in different parts of the country. And that way, when he saw a technique or a form or something, he could know where the person came from. And I think that's kind of funny. Or he would just be on the plane thinking about Five Swords and going, ooh, I bet if we contoured here and I bet if we did this and this, and then he'd go to his seminar and teach something that occurred to him on the plane. So things did change in that sense too. And now that it's a smaller world, everybody's sharing what they know.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I love about Kenpo is that, it is a constantly evolving and constantly growing and changing, and, people, don't fight, don't train, don't think, the same way, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, So it's important to be able to adapt and grow and change, based on how things, work or don't work.
Sure.
I see techniques all the time and it's like, oh, well, yeah, like nobody's going to ever grab me this way or going to attack me this way. And, but you know, there's principles and there's ideas and there's concepts to learn from everything. And, you know, the Kenpo gets that criticism. Well, yeah, we're not going to, you know, nobody's going to stand there while you hit them 50 times. And it's like, well, yeah, of course, but these techniques and are blueprints for what we have available to us.
Yeah, it's not, so, if you do it right, you don't need to hit anyone more than once. Exactly, but what exactly. if you are in this situation? What if you find yourself in this position or that position? The techniques are just a way to show all the different ways that you can hit someone from a specific position. If you have to hit someone that many times, man, you did it wrong. You know, you talked about the perfect weapon. I was actually standing next to Mr. Speakman when they were showing a clip of his five swords, you know, that giant thing where he's just beating the crap out of the bag or something. Yeah. I go, what is that, 5,000 swords? He laughed. He's like, yeah, pretty much. It just kind of kept going. It's like, you think you need to hit him harder because he's still standing.
Exactly, exactly. So just to kind of jump back, I was kind of curious. So you had mentioned that you would kind of jump between schools and
I had to move between schools a number of times
and whatnot.
Oh, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
What was the reasoning behind that? Was,
well, I moved from my, you know, I was a kid, I moved with my family, so that was the first change. I tried a school, which is funny, I wasn't there long enough, I don't even remember the instructor's name. I was there for a little while, like, you know, 6 weeks, and I went, this school is not for me. I was, you know, I was only 15, I was a purple belt. And literally my first class, he says, why don't you come up and lead the exercises or something? It's like, I hadn't practiced in a year and I was not in the shape that I wanted to lead the exercises. I don't know how they do things. I didn't know what I was doing. So yeah, I didn't appreciate that. There just were a few things there that didn't resonate with me. So I stopped going there and I was looking for another school. I found one school and started taking there. And I was there for a pretty short time when Ray Arquilla walks up to me, says, picks up my sheet that I was working on. He says, follow me. And we go into one of the little private areas. And he said, I am your instructor now. I went, okay. And then just like that, I was in his school, which I don't know, but it was kind of funny. Was there for a while. And then I moved to go to school. So I went down to Southern California and I found a school there. Again, I wasn't there long enough to know what was, I wasn't there that long. Moved back to Sacramento, you know, then found another school. So it was like, it wasn't just that I was bouncing around exactly. It was circumstances and I'd have to stop doing Kenpo. I've had a couple breaks. I've been doing it for, I did Kenpo for 26 years over a 35 year period, something like that.
Gotcha.
So, you know, when I had kids, I took a break because, you know, I thought I was done with Kenpo. And then as soon as my younger one was old enough to put in some preschool or daycare for 2 days a week so I could go to class, that changed. Like, yep, going back. Daryl's school is when I started at, took the long break, and then came back years later.
Okay.
And then I just, you know, changed instructors for a variety of reasons. Like I said, I stopped getting lessons with Dave Crouch. I was kind of on my own for a bit, just going to seminars at Graham Lully at school. I usually go down to see Lee Wedlake. And then Graham said, well, hey, if you need an instructor, I'll be your instructor. I went, okay. So I trained with him. He's 3 hours away. So it was like a once a month thing, but that was great. And then a whole lot of life catastrophes happened. And I just said, okay, I think I'm done with Kenpo. And it was a really hard decision. I gave away my school to a friend who then had things, she didn't have the bandwidth apparently to do much with it. And the boyfriend I had who I was doing, he was teaching the kid class. We had broken up like right then at the same time that this other things happened. And he just, it wasn't his school, but he wouldn't go away. So and it basically the whole, that he ended up insisting on taking this, you know, one of the classes. Then he filed bankruptcy and apparently just stopped showing up. So basically the whole thing fell apart. So yeah, and I visited some other schools for a while, some Tracy schools, just as a guest black belt. We used to have black belt workouts on Wednesdays at my school. Well, school class, I mean, it was a school, but it was held in not my building. And we would have Wednesdays where it was just a brown and black belt workout. And I used to post, any black belt who is traveling in the area is welcome to come. Met a lot of great people that way. Just an opportunity just to open things up. Don't care what kind of whether it's Tracy Kempo or Parker Kempo or whatever you want to do. If you're a black belt and you want to come share your art with us, come and work out with us. So I had a lot of people come, and some regulars who were just didn't really want to come to regular classes or didn't have the time, but they could do one night a week. And that was fun. Yeah, we had that happen. I had a train that I was on and the tracks went somewhere else. Sorry, forgot where I was going with that.
Oh, no. I like the cross training, and I wish that there was more connection just going off of, there are a few Kempo schools of different, different disciplines in my area here. And there's not a lot of connection between the schools.
Between the Kempo schools or between all the arts?
Yeah. More specifically, the Kempo schools, yeah. But I will include the other arts as well. Like, it would be nice to do a little bit more, cross-training and connect with, we're all fans of the martial arts, so we should all be able to connect. And instead, my style's this or my style's that. Yeah. I don't like those guys or whatever.
So. One of my students, he liked to do a lot of cross-training, so that was interesting. But we did have a student come in from who was a black belt in Hapkido, and her instructor, open-minded guy, he said, "I want you to learn to round your corners, so go take some Kempo." So she was at the school till she was a blue belt. I actually got to sit on one of her black belt panels when she got promoted. Her instructor was just really great, and he was very gracious and said, "You have taught her exactly what I wanted her to learn, so thank you for that." And then she's continued on doing Hapkido, on her path there. But it was great having her because her thought process was so different because she had done her art for, a long, long time. So didn't you say you did some Hapkido too?
Yes. Yeah, I did a little bit while I was in the Army. I've been courting with the idea of getting back into it. There's a school instructor that I found out here. But as I've said to many other people, there needs to be 40 hours in a day, because
I was just going to say, how can you have time to dedicate to more than one art as it is? I have, since leaving Kempo, I've been doing ballroom dancing, and there are it's interesting because it is also thinking and moving. And there are so many things that I look at and go, that's a rotating twist dance. Or you mean a scoop kick, envelope, scoop kick with a pointed toe. Okay, I can do that. So there's been a lot of crossover, which I find very amusing. But
it's funny to me that you've gone the other way. Usually it's the dancers that become martial artists, and not usually the other way around. So
the dancing is a lot easier on my body.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, no, it's just I don't have. There's so much. I'm doing my Kempo at least twice a week. And then trying to, my Kempo, or excuse me, my Capoeira folks are probably not happy that I'm not training as much as I used to doing the Capoeira. But it's just so much time. And then it's like, then I want to go to this Hapkido school. I want to do this Kali class. I want to do this, Kyokushin.
There's so much.
It's like all these, there's so much to do. And then on top of that, it's like, okay. Yeah, I'm going to do a podcast as well.
And working.
My wife's kind of like.
But that's what I was thinking.
And then I have a job,
too. And then the job. Yeah, the thing about the ballroom dance, I remember why I went there, is time. Because you're talking about all the different styles that you want to do in ballroom dancing, there's 20 dances. Basically, most everybody learns all of them. But that means you can only put a little attention in one and a little attention in another. And, at some point you kind of got to focus while still being able to do the other ones maybe. But, and it's just, I do ballroom dancing at least 5 days a week and, several hours at a clip. And I still don't have enough time to do all the lessons and all of the classes and all of the practice that I want to do. That's why I slept in this morning. Dang, I'm tired. I've been trying to get it all in, plus have the rest of my life exist. And I'm retired.
I can totally relate to the struggle there. So yeah, there's so much to do, so little time. So, but we make it work with what we got. So.
True.
So I was curious about the teaching the teaching side of it, you know, as you were kind of going through the training, were you always kind of interested in that, or did that kind of come later on?
I basically started assisting when I was a blue belt. My philosophy is, as you teach, so shall you learn. Because when you teach a technique, there are things that, first of all, the student asks or that you see going on. And, you start fixing up your pattern of how are you going to present something in such a way that people can get the most of information. You know, you don't leave things out, et cetera, et cetera. Like when I had one student, Eugene, he's awesome. When he came over to my school, I'd been teaching him previously, just kind of, I guess, on the DL. I don't know. I wasn't officially instructing at the time, but he didn't have anyone teaching him. So I was giving him technique instruction and such. Well, when he did come over, he would, that train track just really goes away. I started thinking about Eugene. My mind started drifting off going, well, he was a lot of fun. Oh, I know. When I got up, we were teaching brown belt, working on the brown belt techniques, and I hadn't taught brown belt techniques before. So I'm realizing when I'm starting to go teach a technique, I'm like, okay, so you're standing here and, trouble coming up with how to go over a technique. Whereas if you ask me five swords, I can go over all the points of that all day because I've taught it a million times. Mm-hmm. But as we got through the various techniques and would work on it, the pattern got better, you know, hitting all the information more quickly and more efficiently. I started encouraging him to start teaching because as he is brown belt, he's going to need to learn to do some teaching and such. So I had him come up in front of the class to lead, I think it was, one of the sets, like, you know, finger set or no, stance set or something. And I'm like, and when I would do it, I would go, okay, you know, you step back with your left foot into a right neutral bow and, you know, then transition. And I would just talk through the whole thing. And so I had him go up and do there, and he got about halfway through and he's like, how do you do that? Talking while, God, that's so hard. I'm like, yeah, it takes a lot of practice to get better at it. But I love teaching. I teach in ballroom too, just always encouraging people and such. It's one of the reasons that I put all of those Kempo techniques on YouTube. You know, people are like, wow, thanks for doing that. It's like, oh, yeah, I didn't, it honestly didn't occur to me that other people would be watching it as much as they were. I put them up there because I learned something new from Dr. Dave and I would teach everybody and we would practice it. And then I swear, 2 weeks later, they're like, well, you've never shown us that before. Are you kidding me? So I went to the techniques and I was like, this is the way that we are teaching them currently. This is how we're doing it. That's why on there it says, this is not the way, it is a way. So I put them all up there because even 4 years later, they're like, you've never shown us this before. I'm like, look at the YouTube. That's when I started teaching it. Watch the video. I don't want to talk about this anymore because, you know, it was funny.
I love the teaching side of it. You know, you get so much more, you know, for yourself and, you know, better understand, you know, you have to be able to understand it, to teach it to someone else.
Yeah.
Just all these little insights that you get is.
Yeah. As soon as you start teaching, huge. You're like, I was showing someone a dance move and I needed to give a spiral turn. And I thought, what is wrong? I'm trying to figure out what he's doing because he's learning to teach. So he's learning to follow. And I was trying to think, what is he doing wrong? Because it's not working. And then I looked at it for a minute. I went, you know, weight change and where's, you know, his weight needs to be over his foot. And, you know, I realized that when I started teaching him, then I did it and I showed it and I, you know, did all the aspects of the teaching. And that's when I realized what wasn't working. Same thing happens with Kempo. There was one of the places, the school I was visiting, we were doing Dance of Death. Okay. She was like 10 years old in the adult class because her dad was in the class. So she was in it too. And she's 10. She can't get this technique to work. I mean, generally speaking, she was just having a terrible time. So I showed her a few adjustments that she could make for her size. And I said, and if you step here and you do this and you do this, I think it was Dance of Death. And maybe it was the bear hug, one of the bear hug ones from behind. And you hit the hands, reach around, elbow in the face, hammer fist, the grindy, whatever. So I showed her a few techniques for her size and she knocked me on my butt flat. She just absolutely did. I did. I wasn't just going along with it. She did it. And she started jumping up and down. I did it. I did it. And it was just adorable. Yeah. Cause the techniques have to be adjusted for size. And when you're a smaller person, a technique and being more of a technician is, it works better. There's some of the martial artists who are great martial artists, but they're more mechanics because they have the size and they can make it happen. If you have a lot of strength and a lot of size, you can just be a mechanic. You can go bang, 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 and the person's going to fall down. I can't do that. I mean, I can hit them, but chances are they're bigger than me. I got to knock them on their butt or, you know, use the pointy part of my elbow or something. You know?
Exactly.
Get a little extra bang for your buck. Kill the computer.
Exactly, yeah. It's got to be customized for the individual. You know, one size doesn't fit all. One five swords doesn't fit all.
So, that's so true. So true.
Yeah, no, that's definitely something that I like about is that everybody has to make it their own, and we're not just all carbon copies of the instructors.
That's true.
Fitting it to our needs is keys.
Yeah, it's like fun to see how, if you get a chance, I don't know if you've had much of a chance to go to Kempo camps, but it's fun to go to Kempo camps and see people from all around the country or different parts of the world to see how they do the techniques, the variations, because they might still be all under the same lineage, but still, how do they do it differently? You know, what flavor do they have to it? It's kind of fun. I don't know. That's one of the things I enjoyed is a lot of the Kempo camps and just meeting people I hadn't seen in a while or ever. Or, you know, you see people on Facebook and you kind of feel like you know them because you've chatted so much. One friend, Heather Hodgkins Farmer, she and I hadn't even remembered how we got connected on Facebook, but we chatted a lot. And I did get to meet her in person. She lives in Florida. She came out to California and I got to meet her, and we did some Kempo messing around while we were there. And she said, oh, I saw your videos on YouTube. And then it turns out we had a mutual acquaintance. So she ended up being friends. And when I saw her in person, it was just like we met, just like we'd known each other. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, no, that's something I'm looking forward to with this podcast, hopefully, is that I do get to meet everyone that I've chatted with in person.
And that's neat.
Just have that, you know, just that instant connection. And it's like, oh yeah, you know, yeah, we've never met in person, but you know, we can just get right into talking like we've, you know, hung around each other for years. Looking forward to that, getting to talk to people and definitely going to try and get to what camps and you know, seminars and wherever else I can get in to meet people and and potentially line up more guests for the shows.
Later I can suggest a few.
I love it. Yeah, no, that's probably something I should push more on my guests is to give a suggestion, recommendation. Actually, as I'm kind of thinking about it, I think I've only had one person that they just hit me with a ton of people like, oh, you should talk to this person, that person, this person. But pretty much everyone else really has not really recommended anybody. So
I guess that's because we figured that
you
had an idea of people you wanted to have on there for specific reasons. I don't know what your qualifications are for being on the show. Is there anything in particular?
If you've done Kempo, or well, really, if you've done martial arts, I want to talk to you. That's my current plan. Maybe that'll change. Like I mentioned, I had not expected to get the who's who so early in this journey, but I'm excited for the big names. I'm excited for the little names. I love hearing the stories. I love just
one question getting those differences about martial arts is when I've ever gotten to use it. Because, that's always like, well, have you ever gotten to use it for real? And I have had three occasions, not for fights, because, hey, why would anyone want to fight me? I'm lovely. I did use it when I was 14. I used to run hurdles. And one time I was running the hurdles in a tank top and my cleat caught on the hurdle and I went down and I did the most beautiful shoulder roll that you could imagine. And I know it was a beautiful shoulder roll because I had road rash, as a track rash, from one shoulder perfectly down to my hip. And I was like, well, okay, that hurt a lot, But I was just imagining how awful it would have been if I had face planted instead. Instead, I just kind of got a scrape down my back. But I was like, whoa, Kempo works. I had another time where, one of the, darker sides to being a woman in Kempo is I was a teenager at the time, and I had a sort of instructor. He was my instructor's instructor, who was inappropriate, and more so with my friend, but I didn't like him because he was inappropriate with my friend, and I didn't want anything to do with him. So at one point, my instructor said that I had to go make up with him, which I thought was wrong because he was wrong to do what he was doing. And so we're standing there, and I was told I had to go over and apologize, which just irked me. And he put his arms on my shoulders, and he's standing in front of me, and he just sticks his forearms across my shoulders, sort of trapping me there. And so I stepped back and did the first move of parting wings, which was a move that he showed me. His eyes got big as saucers, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm all done." It's like that was good.
Very nice.
And another time at a bar, I was dancing. We were, having fun. I was sort of dancing with someone, in the kind of we don't touch each other dance, not social dancing. Mm. And he just started putting his hands on my hips. I'm like, dude, I don't know you. And so I did a double palm heel right on the soft part of the top of his hands, dropped his hands down. He got called me a name and then stormed off the dance floor. And I'm like, dude, 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 I'm going to go back and have a good time. So those are the three times I have actually gotten to use my Kempo. If you haven't asked that question of others, that might be.
I think I'm going to have to start adding that, because that's a good one. As I've been learning things and reading books and stuff, that was one of the things that has really surprised me is how many situations that Parker was in.
Well, he created a bunch of them.
Yeah,
he had people attack him so he can work out how to do some techniques. Which is funny.
That's true too. That's true too. But I think we put a lot of people kind of on this pedestal and think, oh, well, they're, this, super humble person or whatever. And they created this art, or, they spreading this art, but they're not getting into, fights and things like that. And it's like, oh, well, you thought he killed this guy and he beat these other guys up. And so it's good to know that what we're training does work and it has been battle tested. But then at the same time, it's like, ooh, like, okay, yeah, maybe this person has a little bit of a dark side, a darker side than I realize.
Well, I'm of the philosophy that the best fight is one that didn't happen.
Exactly.
If you can find a way out of it before it gets there, that's all good.
Like it. So as we kind of move towards the close of our time today, we'll go ahead and move into our my quote unquote lightning round here. And this will probably be a little bit tricky since you're kind of a little bit not kind of active in the Kempo world.
Well, kind of 10 years out of it. So, well, whether or not I'll remember, I still can do my forms up through long three, four I can get through part of. And that's without practice. I tried it a few weeks ago. I was like, let me see what I can remember. Yeah, some of them, no problem.
Nice. I like it. Well, we'll see what we get here. So the first one being, do you have a favorite technique?
Well, it's hard not to love Five Swords. I do love Dance of Death. I love the different techniques. I've learned so many different ways to take a person down using that technique. You can step behind here, you can jam them here, and you can knee the thigh. That one's really fun. And I like that one because I get to really use the pointy part of my elbow. I love hitting people with the pointy part of my elbow. I think that's just great fun.
I agree. I like it. Great. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
I've always liked short three. Long two is good. Short three, for some reason, is my favorite. I don't even know why. It just, you just bang, bang, bang. And it's short, so you can just really power through it. And I don't know. Whenever I want to, someone says, oh, show us a form, I just automatically go to short three. I don't know.
Yeah, no, a lot of people that I've talked to and just heard about, they would agree with you on that. That's
really
one of the higher ones.
Yeah.
So when I originally started, I remember really liking Long 3. It wasn't one of my favorites, but I remember liking it, although I haven't actually done it in 25 plus years.
You haven't, wait a minute, you're active in Kempo. Why have you not done it in 25 years?
Well, when I left my original school and I was, trying to find something to do, I would kind of just go through, I would kind of go through my stuff here and there, but I didn't really keep up with it, and just life and everything else kind of got in the way. So I didn't really, as the years went on, I did less and less of my training. And then a few years ago, I came across my old manual and I was like, let me see how, what I remember. And I was kind of surprised that I could actually get through, quite a few of the techniques and forms and whatnot. So when I decided to jump back into training again, I, got in contact with my original instructor, got videos of the techniques and the forms and stuff. Didn't get everything because he's actually reduced the curriculum. So when I started, we did 40 techniques per belt. And so now he's half that for everything.
Tracy's school is 40. Parker schools are 24 usually, I think.
Yeah.
So that's just it.
So I've been getting, I've been talking to some of the other old school folks, and I've got like the manuals that have the breakdowns of all the techniques and whatnot. And so as I've been kind of training along, with my current training, I've been sprinkling in some of my previous stuff here and there. And then I do work on the forms that I like. So the kind of my little funny story. So one of my favorite forms is book set. And, when I started at the school that I'm at now, I was a little bummed that I had to start back at white belt again. I mean, I'm totally thankful for it now, but at the time I was a little bummed that I had to start over again. But I was like, man, I can't wait until I get, to green belt and I can start doing book set again. And I was like, no, we don't do book set in our curriculum. It was just like so crushed. I got in touch with my original instructor and got refreshed on doing that. And so now I run through all my forms and stuff at least a couple of times a week, just because I enjoy doing the forms. I like getting in everything that I can, so keep kind of training there. So our next question there, if there's anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would that be?
Well, I think that would be Kung Fu Panda. I think I would have to definitely go with very nice. Kung Fu Panda. Definitely has the right attitude about training. Yeah.
I like it. All right, so we are at the end of our time here. So this is the point where you get to have your selfless shameless promotion. I always mess that up. Here's your point where you can plug anything you want or say anything that cover that you wanted to put out there.
I'm not doing Kempo right now, so I have no Kempo things to plug. If you're in the Kempo book and you still wanted copies, I do have some copies still. Find me on Facebook if there's some you really want. But otherwise, thank you so much for having me.
Well, yes, thank you so much for your time and for your stories. And I'm thankful that you are on and we get to chat. And I look forward to getting this out there to have the others other folks listen and hear your story. And I'll be in touch when this is ready to go out. And thank you again for your time.
All right, thanks, Reggie. Bye bye.
All right, bye.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkempo.com. Thank you.